Case number 12-1433, Daimler Trucks North America, LLC, et al. Petitioners versus Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Hanman for the petitioners, Ms. Walter for the respondent.
May it please the Court, Christopher Hanman, I'm presenting argument on behalf of all petitioners. In MAP Trucks, this Court vacated EPA's initial bid to award Navistar non-conformance penalties. It did so because the agency failed to provide notice and an opportunity to comment on that interim final rule. But in striking down that rule on procedural grounds, the Court noted that there, barring any other actions, some grave concerns with the substantive aspects of that ruling. The final rule at issue in this appeal exhibits both of those same flaws. It's procedurally flawed because the final rule announces and then applies a new and fundamentally different definition of substantial work that the proposed rule never hinted at. And it's substantively flawed because the EPA didn't take the opportunity to correct the flaws with its technological laggard finding that this Court identified in MAP Trucks.
Let me ask you, in the notice of proposed rulemaking, where the agency is going over the criteria, the three criteria, in discussing the second criterion,
yes,
it talks about substantial work was required to meet this omission standard. Why wasn't that sufficient notice that the agency was not viewing the substantial work requirement in terms of when the non-conforming penalty was being considered or imposed?
Oh, I think very much that shows that the agency was purporting to apply a standard that said we look at when work was required in the past. Our objection at comments was, but your regulations say something entirely different. The regulations say that when EPA is going to find the existence of an NCP, it has to determine that substantial work will be required.
And so the agency said in its final rule,
right,
we just want to clarify so no one has any misunderstanding that we're doing what we've always done, that this is what we've always said, that we're going to measure from the time of the 2001 standard until the compliance.
Sure, and agencies, of course, are free to adopt.
You say substantially new, a switcheroo, that, all those sorts of words. And I'm just wondering, as to this issue, why isn't that the normal course of rulemaking?
Oh, well, because as this Court said in Sprint versus FCC, the difference between a clarification and a new substantive rule can be measured in a number of ways, one of which is, does the second rule basically either invalidate or is at odds with the first rule?
But I thought you agreed with me that in the notice of proposed rulemaking, the agency had signaled its interpretation, not only because, you know, it incorporated all its previous NCP proceedings, but because of this language that I just referred to, that I thought you indicated you agreed.
No, I agree that the agency was purporting to apply a standard that required a look to the past, but the key starting point is, what does the regulation say at the outset? Like a statute, what cabins the agency's discretion? The regulation says to look to the future. What work will be required? An agency that adopts, if the regulation said must and the agency said, well, we review that to be may, that would be a revised interpretation. An agency cannot adopt through a final rule an interpretation that is directly at odds with the plain language of its existing regulation. And EPA has never defended on the merits this interpretation. It has never suggested that there is a good reason why the future tense can be read to encompass the past. We, in comments, identified Supreme Court cases Carr v. United States, this Court's decision in Shirley v. Sebelius, that makes clear that the future tense cannot encompass the past tense. There has never been a merits determination, a joining of issues in the final rule or the response to comments that said, well, here's why, in fact, our interpretation makes sense. What the EPA did instead was simply change the rules. It moved the goalposts so that the regulation that once said, look to the future, now said we are going to look to the past. Now, substantively, of course, there's no we can't quibble with that determination of NCPs being authorized under that formulation. But the whole point of the notice and comment process was that we were on notice that the regulation said the future, and we said you are not obeying your own regulations.
So as I read the comments, the thinking was that once SCR was available, the game was over. That there was no more substantial work to be done for anybody in this class of heavy-duty engines.
Right.
Do you read the comments that way?
Well, the comments made two, I think, key points. The first was the textual point about verb tense and how the EPA was misapplying its own regulations. The second point was that as when it came to substantial work and what remained to be done, of course, there was no... At that point, Navistar was still pursuing EGR, but yes, the general tenor of the comments was that this technology, this SCR technology, was generally available, widely available, and therefore, as the EPA itself has said in its own prior rulemakings, where virtually every other manufacturer is already complying with the standard, substantial work, obviously, in their terms, and that's their quote, obviously, could not possibly exist. And that's an important point.
Just help me here so I understand. If I'm wrong in the way I read the comments, I want you to tell me, but my understanding was that the comments were along the lines that because SCR is available, it's an off-the-shelf technology,
right.
It doesn't matter what anybody else is doing in this engine category because they can use SCR.
So
this whole concept of substantial work remaining to be done in the future,
right,
no longer is relevant. And EPA took the position, as I understand it, and maybe I'm wrong about this too, that they viewed this whole process going from 2001
right.
to 2010 as substantial work was going to have to be done because there was no off-the-shelf technology.
Right.
And different manufacturers were going to pursue different ways of getting to the ultimate goal. But the comment said SCR is available so everybody can switch, end of discussion. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. And that's why the verb tense is so critical, Judge Rogers, because if the relevant inquiry, as EPA goes about its rulemaking on an NCP, if it has to determine is substantial work required, will be required going forward from the rulemaking, then that's exactly what all those comments were directed at.
So I just need to be clear that you're saying it was an impermissible reading by EPA of its own regulation that where you have, in my hypothetical, manufacturers A and B, if A develops SCR and B can use it, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter whether B has to engage in substantial work in order to use what A's technology is.
Yes.
Was an impermissible interpretation by the agency. I just need to be clear about that.
Yes, but I also want to be careful about the narrowness of the question presented before this court. That's, of course, not the interpretation EPA has advanced on appeal here or in the final rule. EPA didn't make that rule. They said that they changed the rules and say what the determination of substantial work goes back to day one.
They say they just clarified their interpretation because they had this concept back in 2001 that different manufacturers were going to pursue different tracks, and they might not all get to the finish line at the same time.
Yes, and that's certainly the interpretation they have put forward. The point, though, is the regulations have to have meaning. The words mean something, and
you have to be able to argue, don't you, that this is an impermissible interpretation by the agency.
I don't think so, because the agency has never contested that in this appeal.
I thought you were just arguing it was a change in interpretation.
Exactly. Yeah. The change was that the agency had initially said, the agency's regulation said, we look to the future. They now come back in the final and say, we're looking to the past. That's the nature of the narrow question before this court. Was that a logical outgrowth? It certainly wasn't noticed, that change. It certainly isn't a mere clarification. And EPA, in its brief, doesn't really defend it as a clarification, doesn't cite the cases that distinguish between clarifications and substantive rulemakings. What EPA says is that this change was a logical outgrowth. Now, the logical outgrowth doctrine is limited to those circumstances in which interested parties would be on reasonable notice that the agency was proposing a change. But when the agency, and Judge Rogers, as you point out, there are only two sentences that deal with substantial work, neither one of which hints that the agency is contemplating a change in verb tense.
It already changed the verb in the notice of proposed rulemaking. That's what I'm trying to get you to focus on.
But. Well, I guess it's the same way that if an agency's regulation said the agency shall do X, and then in its final rule says, or its proposed rulemaking says, we think this is satisfied because we may do this. It's purely discretionary. One would challenge that by saying you are violating your own regulations. The regulation
no,
says.
No, but what I'm getting at is, in discussing the first criterion,
yes,
the agency is looking at 2001. In discussing the second criterion, it's looking at 2010. And it says, look at all this substantial work that was required,
right,
to be done to get this technology that complies with the more stringent standard.
Right. I don't think we disagree at all. That's exactly what the proposed rulemaking says. Our problem, what the comments were directed at, was saying that it violates your own regulations. The regulations don't ask, was substantial work required? The regulations ask at that time, until EPA amended them, will substantial work be required? That's the fundamental disconnect between what EPA proposed and what EPA ended up doing, and that's why this violates the logical outgrowth doctrine. And now EPA makes much to do, and this is the same theme applies on the technological laggard point. EPA and Navistar emphasize that our interpretation would squelch technological innovation. But the point of the Clean Air Act isn't technological innovation. The point of the Clean Air Act is clean air. And if there's a readily available technology that a party could readily use without any limitations, it should have to do so. It shouldn't
but
be.
But there wasn't in 02. I mean, in 01.
No, there wasn't in 01.
That's
but,
right.
But the whole, again, if we're looking at substantial work, the question is.
No, well, no, wait, but you changed the subject. You okay. Went on to technological.
Okay.
I was just responding to that.
With the technological.
The point is that there was no official technology when the standard was first issued.
Oh, of course, but even EPA acknowledges on brief that on the technological laggard point, that surely is a forward-looking from the moment of rulemaking.
Suppose we would agree with you about the notice and comment deficiency. EPA says we should simply remand it. You say vacate.
Right.
You want to say something about that?
Sure. Well, EPA says that in a single sentence without applying
this. You only said in a single sentence also.
Well, in our reply brief, we walked through the allied signal factors.
We're talking about your opening.
Well,
so just explain to me, without getting into who said what in which brief, why, as we're thinking about this, just in case we agree with you about the notice and comment,
well, I think
why
you
we should think it.
You begin with this court's decision in Heartland Regional Medical Center.
I know what the standard is.
Okay. This is the normal case.
We have cases that go both ways.
Sure. And so the normal case is that you vacate.
We have notice and comment cases that vacate, and we have some that don't.
Correct.
I've looked at them, and I don't see any standard. So explain to me why we should vacate here as opposed to remand.
So the question is why this takes it out of the normal case where this court says that's the right remedy. And the when you look at the allied signal factors, the disruptive aspect of vacating here would be disruptive only to Navistar, not to a wider industry.
And what exactly would it do to Navistar?
Well, according to Navistar, it would.
No, according to you.
Well, according to us, it would prevent them from potentially selling engines, the heavy duty diesel engines.
Because they wouldn't qualify for the penalties.
Well, because there would be no.
There would be no NC.
NCP.
NCPs.
Right. And without an NCP,
they couldn't sell their existing, the ones that don't have the new technology, right? They're selling both, aren't they now?
They are selling their older engines that were polluting at 2.5 times the standard. They are in the process of selling some engines that comply.
So your point is there's no harm to the agency. The only harm is to Navistar.
Correct.
And have we ever, do you have a case where we've ever said anything like that?
Well, not directly on that point, neither does Navistar, but I do think what is telling is this Court's own decision in the Mack Trucks case, because after all, the question there was whether EPA had good cause to bypass notice and comment rulemaking.
Right.
And the only cause EPA identified and Navistar identified were the same ills that Navistar predicts that they will suffer here.
But we vacated there,
and,
correct?
Exactly.
And what were the immediate consequences of that?
The immediate consequences, because of the way the Court's, the delay in the issuance of the mandate, and the tag-along certificates, which was a separate litigation, Navistar has been able to sell with impunity. There's been no effect as a practical matter. That's one of the problems with the way this administrator...
Can you explain that to me?
Well, the interim final rule authorized the agency to issue what are called certificates of conformity. Those give you basically a license to sell your engines. And each year they have to be issued to a manufacturer. That's what that interim final rule authorized, and that's what this final rule authorizes, the issuance of these certificates. When the interim final rule was struck down, EPA had, before this Court decided Mack Trucks, already issued certificates to Navistar. That challenge was actually argued last month, and just last week, this Court actually dismissed our petition for review on mootness grounds because that certificate was only for 2012, and the theory being that 2013 was a new year and there are new certificates.
Okay, so then we vacated in Mecca, right?
Right.
And the consequence of that was that Navistar was able to continue manufacturing because it had these certificates.
That's correct.
And that was a result of the timing of our decision.
Correct.
And now, were we to vacate this time, Navistar could no longer sell those non-conforming units. Right.
Well, were it so, the problem is that there are new certificates that have been issued, and that might jeopardize.
You mean that are not before us in this case?
Correct. There's a separate petition for review that's been held in abeyance pending the resolution of this appeal. Unfortunately, Judge Tatel, because of the timing and sequencing of EPA's actions, these can't be consolidated. Obviously, we would prefer that they all be consolidated so we could actually have a meaningful opportunity to challenge this.
So you mean it's possible then if we were to vacate, it would have no impact on that?
We think EPA in good faith should recognize that a vacatur of its final rule means that it should withdraw, as we had briefed in that previous case.
But there's nothing in our vacatur that would require that.
There's nothing
in... That's a separate case.
That's correct. Technically,
let me ask you, I thought the record was that Navistar didn't have credits to use. So, I mean, how were these certificates issued?
These certificates were issued in reliance on this rule. So, in other words, the rule, the interim final rule and this final rule authorizing NCPs, they are agnostic about the existence of credits, whether you have credits or not.
So we're talking about credits for 2013?
We're talking about certificates for 2013.
I mean, certificates for 2013.
Exactly.
That are independent of the availability of any credits.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, as we explained in the last petition before this Court, it's well established that if the basis for a license or a certificate is vacated, leaving no other legal basis, the certificates themselves necessarily must be vacated. We urged EPA to recognize that rule, and it chose not to, and that's why we had to petition for review. So as a practical matter, Judge Tatel, I think there wouldn't be any immediate impact on Navistar, but the important point is the best analogy to the question about Allied Signal and the vacatur versus remand issue is, I think, the Mack Trucks question, which is that the idiosyncratic concerns of a single manufacturer wasn't possibly enough to justify good cause to get around notice and comment in Mack Trucks. That's why this Court vacated. Neither can it be the good cause or the disruptive consequences sufficient under Allied Signal.
So under Allied Signal, the other branch of it is, well, if the court thinks the agency can fix the problem, no reason to vacate. And those cases tend to be where the court has thought there was an inadequate explanation or something along those lines.
Right.
So I assume your argument is this case doesn't fall on that line either.
That's right. I think this falls more in the line of with International Union, for example, where this Court has recognized that an utter failure of notice and comment is by itself going to be both prejudicial and of the sort that would require vacatur. Where this court has in the past recognized that remand without vacatur is appropriate, there are broad institutional concerns. For example, this court's decision in the Chamber of Commerce case that Navistar cites, the whole mutual fund industry had come to rely on the rule that had existed. Again, you don't have that same factor, and I don't think any case that Navistar cites exhibits those same sorts of concerns. And Judge Rogers, on the substantive grounds, it would not be an easy fix on the technological laggard point. You can't, under EPA's own regulations, you cannot be a technological laggard if it's a mere transference of existing technology. This was a technology that had been on the books for years, and EPA itself, and this is an important concession, I think, in its response to comments at page 55.
Excuse me, you're confusing me. The technological laggard decision judgment is made from 01, isn't it?
No, it's not. Even EPA on brief concedes, Judge Tatel, that the technological laggard finding is made at the point of its rulemaking, and whether a technological laggard is likely to exist. They say that's where the future tense comes into play. And so their point
you
is...
You need to succeed. You don't need to prevail on that argument to win on your notice and comment.
We do not, okay. Absolutely. The point is, though, as this Court's emphasized, especially in prejudicial error cases and vacatur versus remand cases, where there is a notice and comment failure and the court is going to strike down the regulation on those grounds, it's all the more important to vacate and not just remand, because otherwise you might be leaving some serious substantive challenges to the rule in place that the court isn't otherwise reaching.
I don't want to pursue this because I'm not sure it's necessary for your argument, but in a case like this where back in 01 there was no available technology, correct?
Right.
Isn't it possible, in fact, maybe your answer is, well, that's this case, that although Navistar was a legitimate technological laggard, it made its best effort to develop an alternative technology, but it failed. But now that there's an available off-the-shelf technology, right, even though it was a technological laggard, there's no substantial work required.
That's correct.
Is that your view of the case?
That's exactly our view of the case. And this is not a situation in which there's proprietary technology or patented technology. This is technology that truly, as Navistar said, off the shelf. And it would be akin to if you were trying to solve the problem of lowering the decibel levels on an engine. You might pursue your own idiosyncratic tinkering of an engine, or you can slap a muffler on it. SCR is a muffler. It's an external operation. You just put it on, and that's essentially muffling the NOx. It's an easy-to-adopt solution. That's why it's off the shelf. And that's been the big concern. And there's no reason why Congress would want to authorize someone to pollute at 2.5 times the legal limit, potentially for years, on engines that will be in existence for 20 more years, if there's a technology that one can adopt. And no one's saying they have to abandon EGR. Plenty of companies that adopt technologies on parallel tracks. All we're simply saying is that if there is a technology that you can adopt, and EPA concedes that they could have back in 2010 and be compliant today, that's not a technological laggard by any stretch. That's truly an economic laggard, an economic decision that informs that judgment.
Will you refresh my memory? I thought Navistar in other markets was doing the catalytic converter.
That's correct. In Brazil, Navistar has been using SCR for years with some great fanfare. And in fact, when they finally renounced their decision on EGR to say they're going to SCR back in July after the comments in this case closed, part of the reason why they assured their investors this would be a, quote, seamless transition was because of the experience they've had in Brazil. And because, of course, the off-the-shelf technology, which until before that announcement had been characterized in pejorative terms as primitive and off-the-shelf. Now, after July, it's been hailed as certified, well-adopted technology that allows them this easy transition. The important point, though, is that EPA itself, at page 55 of the joint appendix in its response to comments, acknowledged that had Navistar made this transition 2 years ago, they would be compliant today. 2 years ago, this rule came into effect. Navistar made an economic decision to do what it did. That's not a technological laggard. If I have to upload an 8-volume joint appendix to this court's ECF and I choose to use dial-up, if I miss that deadline, I'm not a technological laggard. I'm an economic laggard. I made a poor economic choice to save money rather than use high-speed internet. No further questions.
We'll give you some time and
thank you.
Ms. Walter, before you begin, I was on the panel with the certificates of conformity, and it was my understanding, and I may be wrong, that those were going to cease. And now, according to Mr. Handman, and I know we have some that are being held in abeyance, but my first question to you is Navistar compliant or not?
Compliant with
the 2013 model.
Let me explain that based on the most recent information that I've gotten from Carrie Perlman, Navistar's counsel. What we understand the situation to be is that the only NCP certificates that Navistar is currently using are for a 13-liter engine. And there are a few models or variations of that engine that they're still using NCPs for. All of their other engines, the 15-liter engine, have been switched over to compliant technology.
And what percentage of their fleet is that?
I'm not sure what percentage of the fleet.
I mean, is it little or big? Isn't that why you're answering Judge Henderson's question?
Right. I want to know if we're going to keep getting these, if you're going to keep issuing certificates of conformity, they're going to challenge them. We're going to decide whether it's moot or not.
Right. And actually, that's where I was going with this most recent information, is that by the end of this year, Navistar will not be using NCP certificates anymore, so that at the beginning of 2014, all of their engines, including those remaining 13-liter models that are currently using certificates, will be compliant with the 0.2 standard.
Well, then why does Navistar's brief tell us it would be such a hardship to vacate this rule?
I think at the time of briefing, I don't think, my understanding is that was not clear that they would be able to fully comply by the end of this year, so there was a chance that if the rule were vacated, that there would be significant hardship.
But that's not the case now.
Correct. Based on the current understanding, and in the Fertilizer Institute case, this court said that vacature is not necessary where there's not going to be any harm from the rule remaining in place. And in this case, even if the court...
Well, what's the advantage of leaving it in place then? We're getting ahead of ourselves here. But if we thought there was the only argument I heard for not vacating is that there would be some hardship. If you've got a rule that violates the notice and comment provision, why wouldn't we just vacate? Why would we leave it in place?
Because this court has said that that's appropriate to leave a rule in place when there's been just a procedural challenge and there's not going to be any harm to leave that rule in place.
But we have notice and comment cases where we vacate.
Correct. Again, so, they do swing on both sides of the fence. But in those cases, we're taught it's more in line with a complete lack of notice and comment.
Well, there's either notice and comment, it can't be partially pregnant in this stuff, right?
Well, this is a sufficiency challenge that they make to the notice itself, as opposed to a complete lack of notice, which was the situation in the Mack trucks and why vacature was more appropriate there. Here, the logical outgrowth challenge is about the sufficiency of the notice that EPA provided.
They don't concede it's a logical outgrowth.
No, their challenge is to whether or not...
Says there's been no notice.
Their challenge is that the clarification of the substantial work regulation is not a logical outgrowth of the proposal.
I thought the argument was that there's nothing in the proposed rule that notified the regulated community that the agency was considering changing this rule.
That's their argument, and it's incorrect. And there are actually three...
That's why I asked you what the argument was. That is their argument, correct? They're claiming there was no notice of the proposed change.
But they couch it as a logical outgrowth argument. So substantively, that's what they're saying. But their argument and the issue they present is that it's not a logical outgrowth.
But I read them to say, they assume that's what the agency is going to argue, basically, right. And it's not a logical outgrowth either.
Right. They have to argue that.
The petitioners have to argue that?
Yeah.
Sure they do.
The point here is that
there's no notice and it's not a logical outgrowth.
And again, that's incorrect.
In order to prevail, they have to do both. Why would anyone start out by saying, without saying the former?
It's part and parcel of the same issue. There right. was actual notice in three instances in this rulemaking, not just in the preamble. Okay, right.
Tell me what they are. Yeah.
Certainly. I have joint appendix sites also.
All right, good.
In the joint appendix at page 448, which is a February...
Can I just ask you... Go ahead. Sorry.
That's right.
JA-448?
Yes, which is JA-448.
Uh-huh.
And what are we looking
at? It's a February 2010 letter.
Oh, this is the letter of the manufacturers.
Correct, which EPA sent out at the time the new standard was going into effect. And what EPA said is that we believe that substantial work was likely required to meet the standards. So it's the same interpretation that EPA has always used in terms of looking at what work was required to go from the prior standard to the current standard. Mm-hmm. The second instance of notice is in the Joint Appendix, page 427, which is one of the February 2012 denials of the request for administrative stay. And there, EPA, again, explained substantial work was necessary to meet the 2010 standard because there are substantial changes to the emission control systems of those engines in order to bring it into compliance. Mm-hmm. And EPA concluded by saying, therefore, it is clear that substantial work was needed to meet the standard. And then, thank you, Judge Shadle. The third example I was going to point to is the preamble that I believe Judge Rogers pointed to of the proposal at page 4738, where EPA, again, had the same consistent interpretation where they said that it is logical to conclude that the standard is more difficult and that substantial work was required to meet the emission standard.
Okay, but so, at the time of all this, didn't the existing rules say substantial work will be required?
Yes, it did, at the time of the proposal.
That's the rule that was out there that everybody knew, right? It said will be.
Correct.
Okay, and what you're pointing to then are three places in the Joint Appendix where the EPA referred to the standard as was required.
Interpreted that standard as looking at what was required to go from the prior to the current.
Did it say anywhere that our rule says will be required? We interpret that to mean was required, and here's why.
No, and EPA never went that far because they had no reason to know that that interpretation was being questioned. And it's important to note that in the Phase 6 rule that we discussed in our brief, which EPA issued in 2002, we had very similar circumstances where there was a penalty issued 5 years after a standard went into effect. And in that case, most of the manufacturers were already meeting the standard except for one. And even in that case, just like here, EPA said that substantial work was required to meet that new standard. So even going back that far, EPA's interpretation has been consistent, and nobody in the Phase 6 rule questioned or challenged that interpretation. It wasn't until the comments on this rule that EPA was put on knowledge of what we call this verb tense argument that parties like Daimler put in their comments and subsequently in their brief. In response to that new and quite honestly surprising verb tense argument, EPA decided that they needed to make sure that they clarify that this has been their interpretation of its own regulation to which they're entitled deference for the entire 27 years of NCP rulemakings.
What's your reaction to the argument in the opening brief that, setting aside this notice and comment issue, that this that the switch just doesn't make any sense, that in a case like this, where you have an off-the-shelf technology to be used, and it makes no sense, given the purpose of the statute, to look back all the way to 01?
Well, actually, let me back up, Judge Tittle, and clarify what the purpose of the statute is here. The purpose of Section 206 is actually several. Congress wanted to protect manufacturers who might lag behind in their technology. And the reason is because the standards that EPA issues under Section 202 are what we call technology forcing, typically very difficult to meet. So in those situations, there's the potential for one manufacturer or more to fall behind in trying to meet those very difficult standards. In addition, Congress also had the purpose of wanting to make sure that while protecting those laggards, compliant manufacturers were not put at a competitive disadvantage.
Right.
And the third purpose is actually still to protect the environment. That's why Congress does not allow EPA to issue a certificate of conformity for any emissions that are above the upper limit.
Yeah, but see, well, don't go beyond that. Stick with these penalties, because all these reasons you just gave me I thought you were going to say, yeah, petitioners are right. I mean, if it costs, let's assume it costs from 01 to the time that these penalties were set, you know, $1,000 to develop the technology by the companies that did, right? But it now only costs $1 to implement. Isn't it a, explain to me the reason for giving the non-compliant manufacturer $999?
It doesn't work that straightforward, Your Honor. There is the formula that EPA uses takes into account several, what we tried to explain in our brief, parameters. One of those parameters is the upper limit, which is a limit that EPA is required to determine under the statute is a practicable limit.
Right.
Here, that limit is set at 0.5 because
isn't there just a simple question about whether or not Navistar has to use the proven technology? Right? It's agreed to do that. It's using it, correct?
Navistar has now switched.
It's getting penalty. It's getting these NCPs for engines that are not compliant.
Correct.
Right? And isn't it true that it's, do you disagree with counsel's argument that this is just like a muffler? It's like just putting a muffler on the engine?
Yes, we do disagree with that. And in fact, in the preamble to the final rule, as well as various other places in the record, EPA went through, in discussing technological laggard, but these same considerations apply when you're talking about if you accept petitioner's substantial work argument, what work remains for Navistar to be done. So this isn't like just switching out a muffler. What EPA pointed out is that they actually have to select the SCR system design. The engines, I believe, Judge Henderson, that you referred to in other countries are completely different systems that have to account for completely different emissions that those countries require. And the way you have to configure an engine to account for CO emissions, NOx emissions, whatever other emissions there be may be, is a very complicated process. So
okay, so you base the NCP on that. That I understand. But why would the agency also include in the NCP calculation the work all the way back to 01? Isn't that what this is about?
Because from the beginning in 1985, when EPA interpreted the statute, which no one has challenged, and developed its own regulations, it's formulated the entire inquiry for NCPs based on looking at whether there's a new or revised standard that would require substantial work and therefore create the possibility that the laggards Congress was concerned about could exist.
I understand that. I was just asking, explain to me the policy reason for going back.
Because, again, these are very technology-forcing standards. And in this case, there was a 90 or 95% reduction that was required to go from the previous standard to the current standard. So when you're looking at substantial work, that is what EPA and Congress were concerned about could create the potential for someone to lag behind when you're talking about having to make that much forward progress. But importantly, again, even if you accept petitioner's argument that you have to look at substantial work now.
Yeah, I'll just try once more.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Because I need to understand. So we have a situation where we have two companies, both investing heavily in new technology, right? Baylor and Navistar, right?
Correct.
And now Navistar has realized that its technology didn't work, so it's switching to the other technology.
Correct.
So you get two companies that invested heavily in the technology. And instead of simply calculating the penalties on the basis of what work, substantial work, needs to be done for Navistar to comply, the agency's looking back and including the cost going back to overall, right?
For substantial work only, not to calculate the penalty.
Work, I understand, but why? I don't understand what you mean.
I think to get at your policy concern and why EPA looks back that far at substantial work is because, again, we're talking about companies who are going to try to achieve innovation to meet these very difficult standards. And nothing in Section 206 or in EPA's standards or regulations requires manufacturers to use a particular type of technology.
So, but you're telling me that in terms of calculating the penalty, the only thing that's accounted for is what needs to be done now.
Well, that's a different question, Your Honor, and I want to make sure we're not confusing our terminology, because there is a difference between looking at substantial work to determine if an NCP is appropriate versus what costs do you look at to actually calculate the penalty. Mm-hmm. And if I can...
You want to say something about the second issue?
Yes, that's... Yes, the cost of compliance is the term that we use. And EPA's regulation, which Daimler has not challenged, specifically says that EPA has to calculate the cost of compliance relative to the upper limit, meaning they look at the cost savings to produce an engine at the that emits at the upper limit over producing an engine that emits at the standard. It's a completely different inquiry than the substantial work inquiry. And the reason EPA does that in calculating the penalty is a couple of reasons. First of all, under the statute, Congress directed EPA to remove any competitive disadvantage. Well, the competition in this current state is between engines that emit at 0.5 and engines that emit at 0.2 and everything in between. No engines are emitting over 0.5, so there's no competition for a dirtier engine, so to speak. In addition, the statute, as I mentioned, does not allow EPA to issue a certificate above the upper limit, which again, EPA's cost of compliance regulation says that the cost of compliance have to be calculated relative to the upper limit. Now that's critical because again, Daimler hasn't challenged that cost of compliance regulation. Instead, they've tried to backdoor their challenge by arguing that EPA should have done something completely contrary to that regulation by ignoring the cost relative to the upper limit and considering the entire lifetime of cost, if you will, of going from the previous standard to the current standard. And the final reason why that approach does not make sense is because it also contradicts the statute, because Congress further provided that the penalty specifically has to account for the degree that manufacturers' emissions are exceeding the standard. And again, here, that degree is up to the 0.5 level. So even if you considered the full life of the costs, as Daimler wants this court to do, EPA explained, and specifically it's in Appendix B of the technical support document, which is in the joint appendix, EPA explained that even if you accept their view and consider this entire life of the costs, EPA's penalty can still only reflect emissions at the 0.5 standard. So you have to scale those numbers back and look at what costs are required to take an engine from 0.5 to 0.2. And when EPA actually accepted Daimler's view and considered the full life of the costs, it came up with a lower penalty than EPA did when it used its own regulations and interpretations. If there are no further questions, I'd like to just take 10 seconds to wrap up, Your Honors, and point out that all of Daimler's challenges either ask EPA to act inconsistent with its own regulations or the statute, or they completely disregard the 27-year history that EPA has consistently interpreted these regulations.
So going back to that first issue, just so I'm clear, even though the regulation says will, is your argument that EPA for 27 years has been saying that the eligibility requirement is actually different? It was?
EPA has always said, not in those specific terms.
No, I put it that starkly just to get your answer.
Yes, that has been their interpretation, and Daimler doesn't point to anything to the contrary. And the reason that it looks different here, so to speak, is because in all of the prior rulemakings, except for the Phase 6 one, the NCP was issued at the same time or simultaneous to the new standard. So it wasn't really an issue. But again, even in the Phase 6 rule, EPA had the same interpretation they do here.
Mm-hmm. I've got a question about your brief on page, if you can.
I'm sorry, which page?
Page 44, note 10, you've got, contrary to Daimler's unsupported claim, neither EPA's regs nor past practice preclude penalties where a manufacturer has exercised poor business judgment. And I'm wondering, that's unsupported, and why you didn't include either but see or contrast Mack trucks, which, you know, we're not on a clean slate here. We've got this opinion that even though it's dicta, gives a very jaundiced view of this case on the merits of the MCP. But in talking about why there was no good cause not to give notice and comment, Mack Truck says, EPA's approach would give agencies good cause under the EPA every time a manufacturer in a regulated field felt a new regulation imposed some degree of economic hardship, even if the company could have avoided that hardship had it made different business choices. Now, that says to me that poor business judgment is something that we need to look at, and if it's a result of that, they're not a technological liability.
Poor business judgment may be something the court could look at if that was the sole motivating factor. And let me give you an example. In the Caterpillar case, which we discuss in our brief, Caterpillar was meeting the standard, but it wanted to revise its technology to be able to use NCPs. That is purely a business judgment. There's nothing in the record to show that in 2001, when there was no technology proven at the time to meet this new strict standard, to show that Navistar chose EGR for purely business motivations. Every decision these manufacturers make is going to be based on economic and technical factors. So the starkest example we can point to is that Caterpillar case, where the only motivation was purely a business one or economic one. And there's no evidence of that here. And also, again, EPA's regulations don't preclude a company from having economic motivations, just purely economic motivations. But here, Navistar in 2001 picked EGR, which at the time was the only compliant technology. So Navistar was making a technological and an economic decision, just like every manufacturer made at that time. If there are no further questions, we would just ask that the court dismiss the petition. Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Hammond have? All right, why don't you take a couple minutes?
Let me begin with my friend's comment about the technology and the poor business judgment. This gets to the important aspects of why the temporal inquiry matters. In 2001, no one disputes that Navistar, like any other manufacturer, could make their rational decisions. The question is, after 8 or 7 or 9 years that comes down the road and there now emerges an easy-to-apply, off-the-shelf technology, is there any reason why that manufacturer is allowed to still keep its head down and pursue its own idiosyncratic technology and not switch to something that's readily available?
Well, let me give the hypothetical that's in the record here, as I understand it, is that the EPA, back in 2001, had some concerns about SCR. Right. And the concerns, so far as I can read the record, the concerns it had may have been ameliorated over time, but there's still the concerns. So hypothetically, if another manufacturer here, Navistar, is pursuing something that would be even better environmentally, mm-hmm. and would be less maintenance costly and things like that, that's the situation, isn't it? It's not as though there's, as I read the record, it's not as though they're pursuing some flight of fancy that EPA thinks is ridiculous.
Well, Judge Rogers, that's true as of 2001, that, mm-hmm. that each manufacturer had a rational basis to pursue the technology. The question at the end of the day, though, is at what point in time do you have to say this isn't going to work and we should switch?
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Who makes that decision?
Well, I think
EPA saying that we'd really like, this is a hypothetical, all right, but I just want to be clear. EPA says this other technology would be a lot better. It would be cheaper for all the manufacturers in the long run. It would have all these other advantages. And yet it has to stop and pursue whatever's on the shelf?
I think that gets to an important clarification. No one's saying they have to stop. No one's saying that Navistar can't pursue that technology on a parallel track. Manufacturers do that all the time. Apple may release the iPhone 5 and already be pursuing the iPhone 6 mm-hmm. all along the ways. We aren't suggesting they can't do that. What we are saying, though, and what Congress would be concerned about is that if there is an available technology that you can adopt and can adopt in time before the standards take effect, there is no reason why you should be granted a license to continue your designer type of technology when the off-the-shelf is perfectly suitable and could do just fine. And again, EPA acknowledged that. That takes this out of the realm of the hypothetical. EPA says at page 55 of the appendix that had they done this 2.5 years ago, they would be compliant today in all likelihood. That's an important consideration. To authorize 2.5 times the legal limit of NOx on engines that will now be on the road for 20 years is a pretty bold statement when all you have to do is adopt a technology that's actually out there. But, of course, that also just – that's one issue. I think the simpler way to resolve this case would be on the failure of a notice and comment. Mm-hmm. This is not – this was not hinted at in the notice of proposed rulemaking. It was a new change in verb tense. That's a fundamental shift, and I didn't hear my friend to explain how that was a logical outgrowth. What she cited were previous examples of the agency apparently misinterpreting its own regulations. But the Supreme Court...
Is it true that this issue has just never come up because this case is unique because of the timing?
It is. Judge, this case is unique in a number of ways. One of the ways in which it's particularly unique is this is the first time EPA has ever authorized an NCP after the standard has actually already taken effect. You know, they announced it in 2001. The standard went into effect in 2010.
I thought I understood this case before I sat down here. Yeah. I'm not sure I do anymore. Just looking at these three availability standards, I mean, don't they make perfect sense in the normal situation, including the will be? Because you're looking forward, right? You're asking, okay, we have a new standard. It's going to take years. Substantial work will be required. So doesn't that make sense, correct?
It does make. If the normal case is announcing the NCP at the same time you announce the standard, it does make sense.
Yeah.
Right.
And so here we have the first time there's a case where those two things don't happen at the same time, right?
Oh, actually, that's not true.
That's what she said, and you told me you agreed with that.
No, this is the first time that this has happened since where they've announced it after the standard has gone into effect. But there are many of the other previous NCPs, for example, the Phase 6 that she refers to. Yeah. The standard was announced in the late 90s. It was to take effect in 2004. The NCP was authorized in 2002, 2 years before the standard was
to. Okay, what standard did they use there?
They cited the same regulations, but they didn't get into the verb tense questions.
The 2006?
Yes. And one of the...
So from even that date, was substantial work required for the future?
Yes, actually.
Oh, okay, so the issue just didn't come up.
Exactly, and that's an important point of what I wanted to emphasize.
Okay, so isn't that your problem here, that what the agency, I'm not trying to make your argument, but is it the problem here that, from your perspective, is that the rule did not identify how this perfectly appropriate standard would apply in this unusual circumstance? It had to be applied differently.
I think we win on that standard, but I think the argument was what we presented to the agency, which is that your regulation speaks in terms of the future tense, and interested regulated parties are entitled to rely on what that regulation says. And when you go to the shift to the past, that's a violation of your own regulations. EPA could have joined issue on that in the final rule and explained, no, that this is why the tense can be harmonized. This is how we can harmonize this. Here's our past cases. They didn't do that. What they did is they switched the language. They've never explained how to harmonize those two different interpretations.
What about the denial of the request for the administrative stay?
But the denial of the came after the notice of proposed rulemaking. So even the notice of proposed rulemaking, again, the question is what notice has the agency provided? There is no notice in the notice of proposed rulemaking, and that administrative denial came after the notice issued. Keep in mind, the interim final rule for which we are asking a stay was promulgated on the same day as the notice of proposed rulemaking. So anything EPA says afterward couldn't be given notice beforehand.
So just so I'm clear here, to the extent that the rule makes perfect sense where everybody's looking to the future, but where the standard goes into effect and you're down the road a little bit, there's going to be some looking to the past as well, and then maybe also to the future if there's a laggard.
I think when it comes to substantial
and
work...
And you're just saying that regulation cannot encompass that type of situation.
The regulation's plain language doesn't allow the EPA to look to the past. What it says is that when EPA finds, in the present tense, so when EPA is making a finding about the authorization of NCPs, it has to do two things. The first is to find that substantial work will be required.
Right.
The regulation makes clear that that is a future tense inquiry.
Right.
It doesn't permit the agency to look backwards and say,
and
was
the second
there?
Criteria?
And the second is a technological laggard likely to develop? Again, another forward look.
And was substantial work required? I'm just trying to understand
no,
this.
No, I'm sorry, Judge Rogers. It never says anything about substantial work was required.
Yes.
That's not in the regulation that existed as of January 31st, 2012, when the notice of proposed rulemaking issued in this case.
Oh, so I'm just trying to understand that, in other words, if you have a regulation out there that says we will look
yes.
at what substantial work is required, when we're all starting from the beginning, both the standard and whether or not there will be suitable for any penalties. But when we're partway down the road, EPA needs to have another regulation?
No. EPA needs to apply the same regulation. If they want the flexibility, then they have to go through notice and comment rulemaking to say, here's how you have to do it in these particular situations. And it's not as if that comes as a surprise. Virtually every NCP that they have done since 1985 has actually come after the standard was announced. So somewhere in between the standard's announcement and the standard's effective date, they said, we now need to authorize an NCP. That happened in the last phase six rulemaking. Here it happened actually after the standard took effect. The point is, I think, a simple... I'm sorry, Judge.
No, I want to hear something simple.
Well, here's the simple point. If an agency says, will be required, it needs to look to the future. And it can't say, we're going to look to the past. If it's going to do that, then it needs to go through notice and comment rulemaking to explain to the regulated industry, here's a new change in our language. There's none of the notice and the fairness that this court has spoke about in Small Refiner.
Just two points. One is, again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if you had been writing the proposed rule, it would have said something like, our regulations now say will be required, but this is a different situation because we're approving these NCPs later. So for purposes of cases like this, where we're approving the NCPs at a later date, will be must mean was.
Absolutely.
That's what you think they should have, and then they should have said why.
Precisely. And that's State Farm 101 administrative law.
Okay, second question. Do you agree with EPA counsel that the hypotheticals I used were wrong, correct? Because the question of substantial work is different from the question of the amount of the NCP, correct?
Correct.
So those hypotheticals I had were not accurate. You agree with that? In other words, there's two separate questions. One is, was substantial work required, whatever that means?
Right.
And number two is, if it was or is, then you calculate the penalty, and that has nothing to do with the amount of work that had to be done back to 01.
I definitely disagree with that.
You do?
Yes. EPA has...
I had
I know, yeah.
Let me just emphasize that the court need not reach the penalty question.
I need to understand.
But here's what the agency has always done. The agency has wanted to capture the costs of compliance. That's what it's described in its regulations. The cost of compliance we've submitted, and it's always been this case, is what did compliant manufacturers need to spend going back to the previous standard? In this case, the previous standard was an emissions level of 1.2, and now what did it cost to go down to 0.2? That's a common sense application, and the design of Congress had in mind in Section 206G to ensure that this is an equal playing field. What EPA has done here by tweaking its equation is to go only part way and measure the costs of compliance that the Daimler and all other compliant manufacturers have incurred from a hypothetical 0.5 engine limitation down to 0.2. It's excluded the costs from 1.2, the previous standard, to 0.5. There's no precedent in the agency's practice for doing that, and that's the key critical component. If you're going to ensure what Congress wipes out the uneven playing field that NCPs can cultivate, you have to capture those costs of compliance. So for that purpose, in the past, this is a little complicated because this case is unique in the way EPA has done this so late in the process. But traditionally, the previous standard was always the so-called upper limit, and there was never a difference between the two.
Okay, this is not a notice and comment problem.
This is not a notice and comment problem, not at all. And again, Judge Siddle, to the extent the court wants to resolve this quickly, and given the press of time and how Navistar's certificates are going to operate, it might be appropriate to resolve this case on those narrow grounds, and we would submit that there's no reason not to vacate and follow the normal standards here.
I want to ask one question I'm almost afraid to. If the NCP proceeding had been in 2009 rather than 2 years after the standard went into effect, what would you say about the cost of compliance?
The cost of compliance at that point would be measured from the previous standard up until whatever the compliant manufacturers had spent up to that point.
And what would you say about substantial work?
So substantial work, the question would be, as of 2009, whether there was, in EPA's own parlance, an existing technology that existed in existing classes of engines. In 2009, the SCR technology was already there, and manufacturers were well on their way to complying with the 2010 standard. Some have already done so. But that, of course, would be a unique factual record, and had the agency noted that, there would be an opportunity to respond to that point. This is obviously 2010, and we know, or 2012 when they announced this. And again, I think the EPA's valuable concession, the response to comments at page 55, where they said 2 years ago, had Navistar embarked on this, like all other manufacturers, they would be complying today. Thank you.